Well, I suspect that at least one person in this room today is just wondering, what on earth is going on with a sermon titled Lousy Theology? My hope and my practice here at church is to give you something that you can't get somewhere else. Now, the fact is, you all could have stayed home in your jammies this morning and gone online and surfed the internet and found lots of lousy theology there. So I thank you for coming to church, because we're going to spend a little time talking about lousy theology here. Now, what is lousy theology? Well, to start answering that question, let us remember what theology is. It's derived from the Greek, theologos, speaking about God. Who here in this room has spoken about God or thought about God? Raise your hand. Oh, come on. Every single hand in this room should be up. You thought about it at one point in your life, I'm sure. Once? Come on. So guess what? That makes all of you theologians. You have joined the ranks of Karl Barth, Hildegard of Bingen, St. Augustine, Reinhold Niebuhr. The list goes on. You are in very impressive company. But newsflash, even the greatest of theologians can get it wrong. So before, though, we get to lousy theology, we'll talk about misguided theology. And I'll offer you what is probably the greatest example of that. And I will confess that saying this does require a bit of hubris on my part, but I know I'm not alone in holding this belief. That St. Augustine, conceivably after Paul, the greatest theologian in the history of the Christian church, got it wrong when he focused so much of his thinking and his belief around the concept of original sin. That's the idea that Adam sinned, and as a result, his sin was just passed along throughout the generations. It's created a lot of problems for a lot of people. And if you read John 9, where Jesus is having a conversation with some people who want to know whether the blind man is experiencing his blindness because of the sins of his father, Jesus says, no. Sins don't get passed down that way. If I had a choice between Augustine or Jesus, I always go with Jesus. But Augustine was working with the whole of Scripture, and he was trying to make sense of the fallen condition of himself and everyone else who knew. That's misguided theology. That's not to be confused, though, with lousy theology. Lousy theology is a completely different creature. And we should be able to spot it a mile away. So, an example of lousy theology would be the claim that the AIDS epidemic was God's punishment of gays. Right? We see in Scripture that God unleashes plagues on people, right? So he's still doing it. Now, this is lousy theology in a number of different ways. This notion of group punishment, that's something that God does, not as we've experienced him. I'm going to leave aside the whole question about why God would be inflicting a punishment on gay people, because that's another conversation. The church has gotten it wrong. It's only now beginning to think differently about things. But building an entire theology around a verse in Leviticus and ignoring all the rest of the Old Testament and ignoring everything in the New Testament that we learn from Jesus about God's love is lousy theology. And then if we think about how the AIDS epidemic has spread over the years, if this is indeed a plague that has been unleashed by God, This calls into question, and I say this with great seriousness, God's competence. Straight people get AIDS. I bet a number of people here remember Ryan White, the boy who was getting the blood transfusion, and as a result of that procedure, contracted AIDS. Are we to think that Ryan was collateral damage as God's trying to punish people? I think not. So this is lousy theology. Another example that I will lift up, and I think is especially important for us to think about during this Lenten season as we approach Holy Week, and we will have to read some difficult and challenging texts from John, is the notion that has been propagated throughout the history of the church, and indeed even resurfaced during this campaign season, that God sent Hitler to kill the Jews because they needed to be punished for killing Jesus and not following him. It was Jesus who said, "I come to fulfill the law and not to abolish it." And if we read our scriptures carefully, we'll notice the Jews didn't kill Jesus. It was the Romans. Even in the midst of our Gospels, religious texts meant to convey a theological bluntum of argument, the evangelists write that it was the Romans. And yet no one was sent to kill all the Romans. Lousy theology leads us to bad places. And lousy theology need not be as epic as these two instances I just offered. Lousy theology can happen on a far more local basis. It can unfold in our lives. Those folk beliefs about God that are passed down from generation to generation. So let me share a couple of examples with you that I suspect you will all appreciate. Lousy theology can be found in the statement that his suffering served a purpose. I've been thinking a lot about this one lately. You've heard me mention my friend Ben, who recently died of a brain tumor. Sorry, I do not believe that God visited this illness on Ben so he could somehow grow deeper in his faith with God. I do not believe that God somehow thought that his suffering was going to be a blessing to his wife and his children and his siblings and his parents and all of his friends. And if you don't believe me, again, go back to John 9, and there you will see Jesus saying that God does not inflict punishment through illness on people. Another example of lousy theology is the statement is that God will give somebody no more than they can bear. Really? Do we actually believe that? If we do, I don't think we've ever really suffered. I don't think we've ever actually had to carry a real burden. Go to the ICU and visit people there. Go visit our friends in Headrest who are trying to overcome addiction. Go deal with people who are in the midst of a relationship that has been hit and is falling apart. Do not tell me that that is what God is doing. That is lousy theology. And then there's more lousy theology that Jesus points at in today's reading from Luke. We only hear part of the conversation, but it's interesting to see how Jesus responds to these people who come to him and tell him about the Galileans who have been massacred by Pilate at the temple and the people who died in the construction accident at the Tower of Siloam. If you listen to Ron read that passage, you would have heard a rebuke. Do you think those people, those Galileans, were somehow worse sinners than anybody else in Galilee? Do you think those people who were crushed by the falling tower were somehow worse than the rest of the people in Jerusalem? Jesus is saying something like that because implicit or explicit in something they said to him was, gee, those people must have been sinners, and God was giving them what they deserved. Jesus is having none of it. Indeed, Jesus tells the people who were talking with him, not only should you not say that those people were somehow worse sinners than anybody else, you should not draw inferences from events that are under God's control, but you need to look at yourselves. You need to look at your behavior and what you are doing. Otherwise, you are going to come to an unpleasant, unfortunate, meaningless end. Jesus says this because what these people are doing is sinful. They're not focusing on their own shortcomings. They're not focusing on their own walk with God. Instead, it's easier to go look at what somebody else is doing. We can appreciate this dynamic. Isn't it easier to tell somebody else that they should eat more healthy food than to do it ourselves? Get more exercise, be more responsible with their money, take better care of their family or friends? Isn't it easier to talk about somebody else's shortcomings and failings? We all fall into the trap. We might even do it in this building. Coffee hour. We can go have a quiet conversation back there in the kitchen. We can send emails, post stuff on Facebook. Boy, we can talk about other people's shortcomings all we want. But if we do that, we are courting trouble. We heard a parable about a tree that was producing no fruit. Now, some of Jesus' parables are really hard to figure out, but this one is pretty easy. You and I are the tree. And it looks like it's time to cut us down. But we're given another chance. We're given a chance to yield fruit. To look at what we're doing that's separating us from God and God's people, and to amend our ways. Now, when we hear this language about God cutting down the tree, because God's the landowner, it can sound kind of punitive and harsh and scary. Judgmental. There's a bad word in the 21st century. But it's not meant to be. The reprieve that is granted here is actually a reflection of God's mercy towards us. And it's not the mercy of some kind of autocrat who decides that he's going to let the little minions off easy this time, but next time he's going to dope slap them. No, it is instead the mercy of one who loves us. One of the books I've read during this Lent is by Pope Francis, and it's called The Name of God is Mercy. And it's a series of dialogues he had with an Italian reporter in the context of this year's Holy Year of Mercy that was promulgated by the Catholic Church. Francis argues that mercy is at the heart of who God is. And he notes that the etymology of our word mercy is derived from misericordis, which in turn means opening up to wretchedness. That's what God does with his love. He opens himself up to our wretchedness, to our pain, to our failings, to our shortcomings. And he doesn't push us away, but he says, come to me. Come to me. I want to hold you. I want to heal you. I want to love you. I want to redeem you. But there's only so much time to do it. We're all smart folks here, and we know that there are exactly two activities in life in which we are all guaranteed to participate. We'll all be born, we'll all die. We've all taken care of the birthing part. We are all going to kick the bucket. Shuffle off this mortal coin. Pick the euphemism you like, but it will happen someday. And God doesn't want us to pass on from this earth without having made things right with Him and with His people. It's so easy for us to fall into patterns of behavior where we criticize others or we're judgmental. But as the Pope wrote, the mission of the church, and I believe for Christians as individuals, does not exist to condemn people, but to bring about an encounter with the visceral love of God's mercy. I love that phrase, the visceral love. It's something we can feel in our guts. The love of God is meant to overwhelm us and to capture us and to redeem us. Time's running out. Today's the 27th of February. On March 27th, we are going to gather early in the morning out in Colburn Park. And then for those who like to sleep a little bit later in the sanctuary, for our festival worship, to celebrate the resurrection. So only half this month of Lent ahead of us. And what better time of year for us to reflect on these questions of mercy and how we can be more merciful to others and how we can receive and accept God's mercy for us. This is the time of year to do this. And if we're looking at a bigger canvas, we know time is running out for each and every one of us. So if our time is limited, if there's only so much of it, why do we want to waste it engaging in lousy theology? In living lives based on false premises. When instead, we have the opportunity to be shaped by, to be grounded in, to live in good theology. Theology that is grounded in God's love for us, and His grace, and His hope, and yes, His mercy. We have an opportunity to receive these gifts, and individually as people of faith, and also as a community of faith, to share them with others.